Namaste, good evening. Way back in my ashram zealot days, we would do a lot of practice. And in the early morning, we would do our yoga and our meditation practice starting, you know, at 4:30 or 5 a.m. And we would all kind of pack ourselves into a room, into a big room. And we're always looking for ways to keep it inspiring because, as you know, practice can be a slog. You have to keep looking for ways to keep the juices flowing. So one of the leaders during yoga decided that for inspiration, he would randomly ring a bell and then randomly open some scripture and read something, you know, that was there. And I remember this particular morning. It was in the winter, very dark like it is now. And we were all in the shoulder stand, you know, where you're up on your shoulders with your feet up in the air. And there are probably about 80 of us in this dark room, only lit with candles and his candles. So we're all hanging out for extended postures, you know, in the shoulder stand. And this bell rings. And he says something to the effect of, understand this, and to take human form is rare. To take human form and be exposed to teachings of liberation is beyond rare. And to take human form and be exposed to teachings and practices of liberation and contemplate them is the rarest of the rare. To take human form, be exposed to these teachings, contemplate them, and to practice them is the rarest of the rare. Then there was a pause. And then he went on and he said, and of all those who are drawn to contemplate and practice the universal teachings of liberation, only one in every 500 years will be fully liberated. And in the back of the room, there is this upside down, throat constricted voice that said, gee, thanks, that's encouraging. Followed by a very unique sound of 80 people falling out of the shoulder stand. But I think that story is kind of apropos because I'd like to talk a little bit about this incredible miracle of being in a body. And I'd like to talk tonight about the role of the body in our practice here this week and how practicing awareness or mindfulness of the body will not only help you feel more whole and healed, but how practicing mindfulness and awareness of the body can reveal insights into the nature of reality that truly do lead to liberation. You know, if you buy a relatively new car, one that's like 1 or 2 years old, and it has some of the new technology, the technology is pretty amazing. Not even fully driver-assisted cars, but even just like the warning systems you have in cars. These systems take 25 high-definition images per second to kind of identify what's out there. And there are scanners that will monitor your transmission and the speed to make sure it's optimal 10,000 times per second. And it's an interesting analogy here because the cameras that are scanning on your car, they're not stopping to say, oh, look, a baby deer. Or like, wow, she looks really nasty. They're not making any commentary. They're just noticing. It's just that noticing faculty. That's kind of what we're cultivating. This capacity to notice what's here. Tara said last night that when you go half as fast, you notice twice as much. And maybe you've noticed that in the last couple of days as you've begun to settle, that there's this the noticing faculty is really getting enhanced. You're beginning to catch on to what's happening. And so this whole piece around mindfulness, what exactly is mindfulness? You know, there are lots of translations. It's present moment awareness. It's non-judging present moment awareness. Sebenet spoke so beautifully about this practice of sati, of remembering that it's actually kind of an embodied presence. Like that present moment awareness is, it includes the body. Bhante Gunaratana wrote this. He said, the purpose of meditation is not to concentrate on the breath without interruption forever. That by itself would be a useless goal. The purpose of meditation is not to achieve a perfectly still and serene mind, although a lovely state. It doesn't lead to liberation by itself. The purpose of meditation is to achieve uninterrupted mindfulness. Mindfulness, and only mindfulness, produces enlightenment. Present moment awareness, or you could say non-judging present moment awareness, is the faculty that produces enlightenment. And so as you have no doubt begun to settle and notice more and more and more, inevitably you are more aware of what we call the stream or the flow of phenomena, this cascade of information that is just passing through all the time. And if you can imagine that scanner that's taking 25 images per second, that's actually scanning what's happening in your experience, it's quite amazing how much is really going on. One way to look at this is to kind of break it down into specific streams. Well, one stream that's passing through, constantly changing, is the stream of sensory data. There's a sound, there's a feeling of your breath, there's a little twinge, there's the perception of the cool air on your skin, there's the sense of another sound. There's another stream that happens. It actually kind of builds on that stream, which is the feeling tone. That raw sensory data is then interpreted as all the sensations that can be falling in the category of the unpleasant stuff, and then the pleasant stuff, and then everything in between. And this level or play of Vedana, the feeling tone that just comes and goes. And if you really tune into the feeling tone, you'll notice how you're moving contraction, expansion. You know, you'll have a warm thought of remembering someone, and you'll feel that pleasantness begin to fill you. Or an unpleasant memory comes up, and then you'll notice the contraction. Or you'll kind of feel a lot, there's a lot in that in-between state. And many people have shared in the groups how they're noticing there's a lot of in-between. There's a lot of the neutral going on. It's kind of hard to stay present when there's not a lot of fluctuation in the field. And so another flow, another stream that arises out of that are the stories that arise. So let's say you're practicing and then you feel the cool air flowing over you. For each of us, we're having our own subjective experience with that cool air. For some, it can bring in a sense of feeling refreshed. And you'll feel it, you'll interpret that as a pleasant sensation. And then you might even go into a story around it. I like cool air. I'm more of a New England person. I could never move south. Why would I ever want to go to Florida? My parents went to Florida. I always hated going to Florida. And there you're off. Or you feel the cool air and you're thinking, why can't they figure out how to keep the temperature figured out here in this room? Why is it just fluctuating from a meat locker to a to a sauna. I had to write a note. This is it. We're all reacting from what is arising out of this raw experience of sensory data. And quite often, those thought forms build on each other and they just keep on going. And that's the Pali term is papancha. And it's just the proliferation. And sometimes, as has been reported in some groups, an entire sit will go by. And then you might realize, my gosh, I've just been in a narrative the entire time. I never once was aware of my breath. In this sort of this construct of seeing this stream of like raw sensory data without any story, and then the feeling tone that arises out of it, the Vedana, and then the stories that arise out of that, there's kind of another flow. It's kind of a little bit hard to sense, but it's referred to as the foundation of the Dhammas. And the Dhammas can be seen as like the manifestations. And here, sometimes, you can begin to sense and recognize that there are patterns to your thoughts. You might begin to recognize, wow, it seems like a lot of my thoughts move toward aversion, anger, judgment, and blame. Or, wow, I'm having a lot of thoughts that I could kind of lump into the category of wanting. And you realize these are all the thoughts that do with fantasy and planning. Or you realize there are a lot of thoughts that go into the category of restlessness and worry and anxiety, or thoughts that go into sloth and torpor or doubt, or you begin to recognize, wow, this is a lot of thoughts I can put into this little drawer of the ruthless critic. And here at the level of kind of the perception of the Dhammas is where we begin to also see, this is where kind of the lists begin to come into our awareness, where we begin to recognize, you know, that they're, you know, the four principles, the four noble truths, you know, these five obstacles that occur. But we begin to see, we begin to recognize as well the quality of our perception. And there's just sort of like this phenomena, like this chain of arising that I always like to name in the context of this. And that is that, you know, first there is this raw field of sensation, just life force happening. And without even being aware of it, we instantly interpret that as pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral. And if we're not aware, we immediately go into stories. And we build story upon story upon story. And if you're not aware of your thoughts, and you think the same thought again and again and again and again, that thought will calcify into a belief. And if you're not aware of how your beliefs are operative in your life, those beliefs are going to form your habits. And if you're not aware of your habits, they form your character. And if you're not aware of your character, that becomes your destiny. So when we practice self-observation without judgment, you've got lots of options where you can sort of focus your attention. You can look at your habits. You can look at your character structure. You can really look at your core beliefs and how they impact your life. You can look at the nature of your thoughts and recognize the habitual patterns of your thoughts and where they go and how they affect your behaviors. And you can look at the feeling tone underneath it. And you can come back to this raw experience of here and now. And sometimes, when you can be with this raw experience of here and now and recognize the unpleasant, the pleasant, or the neutral, and recognize the habitual way of reaction, to recognize that when an unpleasant arises, the habitual reaction is to nuke it and make it go away. To recognize that when pleasant arises, you want to strategize how to keep it and make sure it doesn't go away. And how when the neutral arises, we tend to get bored and spaced out. When you recognize that you can actually be with that experience, as it is. So when unpleasant arises, rather than move away from it, you can actually like stop and actually examine it, investigate it, be with it. You're changing a very powerful dynamic. It's a way of sort of like catching that proliferation of thought before it can flower. That's what's possible. And of course, as we talk again and again about this analogy of the big circle with the line through it, as you continually come back to the aliveness of the body, you know, as you relax and feel and pay attention to what arises, the line moves, and you begin to feel things you hadn't felt before. You may begin to notice habitual thoughts you didn't realize how habitual they were. You know, the top five stories that come cycling through, or how your mind just keeps going back to fixate on a relationship or some issue. You start to become more aware of all the activity that's going on below the line that you weren't aware of before. That's part of the magic and the miracle of this practice. So, as Sebne was speaking of, this practice of sati, the remembrance, is about remembering that this place of aliveness in the body, this moment-to-moment experience of here and now, this breath, these sensations, this is home. This is home base. And it's a radical practice to sit undefended. As I was thinking about this, this sort of like undefended act of just resting in presence, I just flashed on a memory of back in the ashram days. We bought this building that was built in 1956, and it had these really like these ceiling tiles, but they were all glued to the ceiling. And after like 50 years, the glue started giving up. So at random periods, there would be these ceiling tiles that just come crashing down. And this one office in particular, I think there was a lot of humidity. You know, they started just getting these random crashing ceiling tiles. So the manager of that department, he created these hats where he bought everyone a baseball cap with a toothpick pointed straight up. And they were labeled the early detection warning system. It's kind of the rule of the jungle, you know, is if you relax and close your eyes, you're someone's lunch, you know. So our awareness is kind of designed to keep scanning for potential threats. And inevitably, when you engage into this practice, it is such a radical act. When you sit with your eyes closed and you can feel relatively safe, and you can call on the Buddha, whatever that means, you know, when you can call on wakefulness, when you can call on the refuge of the Dharma, let me know what is true. When you call on Sangha, when you call on love, the collection we have here to cultivate presence, to be with what is true, it is truly, truly a radical act. And as that line moves, inevitably, whatever's undigested in your life will be there to be seen and felt and acknowledged. And the question then becomes, what do you do when you hit the rough stuff? What do you do when you encounter intense physical pain? Or when you encounter emotional turmoil? Or when you encounter like an obsessing mind that won't let go of something? When you're really in that hard place? We've talked a lot about the acronym of RAIN, you know, to recognize what is here, to ask if you can allow, make room for it, to investigate more intimately what's there, and then to nurture what you find with empathy and kindness. And I'd like to talk a little more about that model, and particularly on sort of the investigation piece in relation to the body. Because quite often we are habituated when we're investigating something between us and feeling free, there's a tendency to be cerebral. You know, we want to figure it out. And that wonderful phrase used by, you know, by many massage therapists, your issues are in your tissues, seems to be true. That when you experience a strong emotion, it is a psychobiological event. You're experiencing it in your mind, but you're also experiencing it in the soma. You're experiencing it in the body. And in that same way, when your thoughts, if you slow down and pay attention, you may find that there's a resonance on the inside. So I wanted to share a little bit about some of the skillful means that may be helpful as your practice deepens, as we move into the belly of the retreat here. And I just thought I would just share a story of a woman who I was in conversation with. And she was really struggling because she was in a constant battle with her two teenage kids. They were basically good kids, she said, but they were doing some really dumb stuff, and she could not stop herself from trying to point out what they could do better, which sounded a lot like nagging, the way she was describing it to me. But she had recently had a blow-up with one of her daughters who said some really hurtful things and wouldn't speak with her. And so she was really sitting with a real clench of despair. And so as she kind of described that particular issue, you know, and I asked if it felt okay, and it did. And it's very important, again, as what we said many times, when you choose to turn your attention from your anchor to investigate some phenomena, again, physical pain, emotional turmoil, mental agitation, to really ask, does it feel okay? Does it feel safe? And then listen. And you may get a sense from your body that may say, no, not now. In which case, it's very helpful to let it know you see it, let it know another time. When the conditions are different, you want to be with it. But to shift your attention, it's a very strategic. But for her, she was open to it. And so we began to explore. So as she thought about this issue, what feeling tone began to arise on the inside? Where we tend to feel the most is the midline and the core. So it's around the eyes, it's the throat, you know, the jaw, the heart, the belly, down into the core. And so as she began to turn her attention inward, she reported that she felt just a flush of anger. And she could feel the heat on her face, she could feel the, and she described the kind of the clench and the this heat, like she described it, like a tube, you know, running right up through her heart and into her throat. And I invited her to describe it, to get more familiar with it. And I asked her if she could let it get big. And as she imagined letting it get big, then she said, why do I feel sad? And I had her describe what sad felt like. And she said, this is so stupid. This is so stupid. I could just feel this recrimination coming in. Now when we talk about nurture, this is a really something we each need to figure out for ourselves. What does it mean to hold something in loving presence? And for each of us it's different. You know, Tara often recommends putting a hand to your heart. There is something about that touch point that can be really powerful. You know, Thich Nhat Hanh offers the phrase simply to say, I care about the suffering. And for others who find it hard to offer compassion to themselves, it can be helpful to imagine if someone you loved was feeling this, how would you respond? If a child or a pet, what would be your response? Sometimes it's helpful just simply to say to yourself, other people feel this too, as a way to get access to the felt sense, the feeling of care. So we explored some ways that she might be with it, because there was so much aversion. And as she put her hand, you know, on her heart, and as she breathed into it, she began to cry, and she cried for a long time. And it was almost like there were tears of a young child. And I asked her the sadness that she felt, like how old was it? And she said, she thought for a long time, and she said, this is like maybe 2 or 3 years old. And she said, my mother never let up on me. She told me I'd be a failure if I didn't work twice as hard as my brothers. She never let up on me. She goes, this is from my mother. And she sat with that. And she said, you know, whenever my mother would talk to me, she would talk to me like this. You know, and she was just like this. And then there was this pause, and she said, wait a minute. My grandmother would talk to my mother like that. And then suddenly she began to get a connection of this chain being passed who knows how far back. Reminds me so much of what Tara was describing. It's not your fault. You know, this is an inherited process. And as she reflected on that, she then said, she just opened her eyes and she said, I am not passing this on. So how does your body communicate to you? I like to think of listening to the felt sense or the feeling tone of the body. It's like listening to a child who doesn't have words. It's like listening to an animal that you love. That it can only communicate through feeling. And there's like an interpretation of feeling that happens when you tap in here. And quite often there's a very interesting practice that you can explore as you sort of refine your somatic inquiry. Is to really to notice that when you tap into the feeling, to the sensations, that's all below the line. Your awareness is above the line. And quite often it can be very helpful to try to find a word that describes what you're feeling to yourself. And then check back and sense if that word resonates. There's so many times when I might be doing an exploration with someone and they'll say, this is anger. And I'll say, so can you verify that? Go back to the feeling. Is the word anger, is that the right word? And they'll say, no, this is disappointment. And they suddenly shifted into a much more intimate sense of what's there. When you, or as you explore more and more this investigation through the body, with anything that's between you and feeling free, it's helpful to kind of get how does this communication from the body, it generally shows up in three ways. One way is it'll be strong and unmistakable. You can't miss it. It's the lump in your throat, you know, but the burning around your eyes like you're going to cry. It's that twisted feeling in your guts like something horrible is going to happen. You can't miss it. It's, you know, the 2x4. Another way, as you move into this somatic sensing, is that what you'll notice may just sort of like appear like a flash and disappear. Or it'll be a wave, and then it's gone. And you think like, wait, wow, that felt like grief, but I can't find it. Quite often, because of what you're sensing is below the line, it's unformed. It's unfelt, it's unseen, so it's going to feel vague. It'll be amorphous. And this is where the practice really comes into play, to really slow down and really sense what's there. I love the word something in this practice. You know, there's something heavy here. And as you begin to sense what's there, then you start to begin to open up a very intimate relationship with that. And some of the questions you can ask that can begin to open the doorway to nurturing is to ask, what does this need right now? Or to ask, how does this want me to be with it right now? If you feel that tightness in the solar plexus, how do you want me to be with you right now? And then listen. And it may take a while to listen, to get a sense. But if you listen with sincerity, quite often, there'll be a little more information that'll arise, and you may begin to feel a shift on the inside. So anytime you find yourself caught in physical unpleasantness or strong emotion, and even when the mind is really, really gripped on something, sometimes you can sort of track it back. If the mind is obsessing, you might inquire, is there an emotion here? When I explore that, can I feel it on the inside? And you may begin to sense some relationship between how that issue lives on the inside. That'll begin to perhaps open up some new possibilities. So perhaps we can do just a brief reflection on this, just to sense this on the inside. And you might just sense in this moment, as you let yourself open into embodied presence right now, just feel the breath. Notice the sounds. And you might sense if there's anything present right now that is between you and feeling good inside. Or you might just take a moment to reflect on a moment of difficulty today, a moment when you felt tight or stuck or frustrated. And I'd like to offer just a few questions that might be helpful as you kind of reflect on this practice. And some of the questions may resonate for you, some may not, but they may be helpful just to have stored in your memory. As you reflect on something you might like to spend some time with for the next few minutes, you might just take a few moments to recognize what's here. If you were to describe this in a sentence or a phrase, how would you describe it as if you were sharing with another person? And does it feel okay to be with it? Does it feel safe to spend a little more time with it? And as you ask that question, what do you sense? As you think about this issue, as you stream attention toward this issue, You might take a moment to visualize it, if there's any visual content. Any sounds or words you associate with it. And then sensing on the inside, as you think about this, can you locate what this feels like inside? Is there a shape or a color or a word that might describe what it feels like inside? And sometimes it can be helpful to imagine if you could describe it to someone else so they could recreate the same sensations. How would you describe it? Is there an emotional word that might resonate with this feeling on the inside? And you might verify or validate, does that word resonate with the feeling? And if not, is there another word? As you sense this on the inside, however you may sense it, is there a sense of how old it is? How long have you held this and carried this in your nervous system? And whatever you may sense, whatever you may feel, you might explore some of the questions that might open up this sense of empathy or kindness. Is there a sense of what this needs right now, or a sense of how it wants you to be with it right now? If you were to hold this with some kind of loving presence, some empathy or compassion or kindness, how does it move or shift or change? And just sensing as you reflect back over this inquiry, anything that may have shifted or changed, or perhaps any of these questions you might like to have in mind for future investigations. And if you'd like, you can deepen your breath and open your eyes, or if you'd like, you can remain with your eyes closed. And these are some of the elemental questions that can be helpful to move from being caught in the story to begin to really sense how it lives on the inside, to really explore it on that primary level of energetically and in the feeling tone. And really this practice of Vipassana is really turning attention from your anchor to investigate, to really see clearly into the nature of what is here. And there are a couple things that I've found helpful over the years. And it's quite often a question that comes up, particularly on retreat, where people ask, well, should I always be working on something? You know, should you be looking for things to really investigate? And my response is, don't look for anything. It'll find you. That really kind of the elemental practice is, again and again, moving from the cognitive, from the narrative, back to the here and now, and resting in presence. So we're not looking for things to work on, but when they organically arise, and you intuitively have the sense of turning to investigate, when something's really persistent, it can be very, very skillful. The second is, in my own particular practice, I was not particularly attuned to my emotions. I was, like to joke that my grandmother's name was Wilhelmina Augustina Schulholz, which gives you an idea of how important emotions were in my upbringing. I found myself, in doing this investigation, wanting to figure it out. Okay, well, I want to figure it out. And what I found, that was really a trap. And for me, and I've mentioned this in a few groups, that when I can substitute the words get familiar with instead of figure it out, is a completely different experience. Figuring it out has an end result in mind. Getting familiar with is a much more intuitive sensing. It actually brings me, I can get much more information. And as the Buddha said, that familiarity leads to wisdom. So if you can investigate with a sense of that intention to be more familiar with what's here, it's a much softer approach and a much more thorough approach, I find. And the next thing that I find myself caught in, I find many other people feel caught in, is that when you've really been with an issue, like you've really worked it, the disappointment when you find yourself caught again. Because there's some belief or some concept we have of like, haven't I dealt with this? Why is it back? And there's a story from the Dalai Lama that I heard that has been so instructive for me. And apparently in this story, he was being interviewed by a reporter. And the reporter asked him, do you have any regrets? And the Dalai Lama said, yes. Yeah, I have regrets in my life. And the Dalai Lama and the reporter said, can you tell me one? And the Dalai Lama told him a story of how when he was young and installed as a young man as the Dalai Lama, an old monk came to him asking for permission to do these practices that were much more suitable for a younger monk. They were very energetic, kind of yogic practices. And the Dalai Lama told him that no, he should stay with the practices that were better for an older person. And then he found out years later that monk had committed suicide in the belief that he would take up a younger man's body to do these practices. And the reporter asked him, well, what was that like? And the Dalai Lama said it was terrible. It was just such self-recrimination and so much self-doubt. And the reporter asked him, well, how did you make it go away? And the Dalai Lama looked at him incredulously and said, I didn't. It's there. It's just a question of how I hold it. And I love that story. Because I certainly have seen in my life that the patterns of how I show up again and again and again. And when I can remember that, yes, they're there, it's a question of how I hold them. The more familiar I can be with them, it shifts everything. As Ram Dass described, you know, toward the end of his life, saying, after a lifetime of of doing meditation retreats and being a meditation teacher, a lifetime of doing therapy and being a therapist, a lifetime of doing extensive chemical research, I have come to recognize I'm as neurotic as I've ever been. So the difference is, now I'm friends with them. So when we contemplate the body, when we contemplate what it means to be in one of these flesh units, there are very powerful insights can arise just on contemplating the existence of the body itself. So many years ago in my, back in my celibate poverty vow, living in the ashram days, I was doing a retreat. And we had segregated, you know, segregated sexes in our community, and there was someone who I was fascinated with. I must point out this was years and years before I met my wife. But, who was at that time in another ashram somewhere else. So as I was meditating, I would find myself, and again, practicing celibacy in your 20s and 30s is challenging. So as I was meditating, I would just keep fixating and fantasizing on this person. And I tried everything I could, you know, concentration, push it away, come back, just so much self-recrimination. And I realized that this wasn't going to go away. And the classic teaching story, which I know many of us heard of, the yogini in her cave. He was visited by three demons, and they're whirling around the cave, and she very calmly gets up from her cushion and starts building a little fire. And the demons are enraged because she's so non-reactive, so they crank it up a little more, and very calmly she builds a little tea kettle. Or she puts a little tea kettle on the fire, and the demons are so frustrated they throw everything they have at her, and very calmly she's putting out these teacups, and finally these demons stop and they say, "What is going on? Were your three deepest wounds, your three worst nightmares, and here you are building a fire and putting a tea kettle on and putting out these teacups." And she says, "Well, you've been here before and you'll be here again, so in the meantime, what kind of tea would you like?" That's the practice. Right there. And so I realized I was not going to escape. And I thought, okay, I'm going to have tea with this demon. And so I just sort of sat and I just sort of like welcomed this sort of being, this sort of amazing fantasy, you know, whatever it was. And I really, this is exactly what happened. I sort of sat there, and then she smiled, and then the smile got bigger and bigger and came back over her skull, and she became a skull, a skeleton. And I was like watching the fascination and desire turn into this, you know, kind of horror. And then basically I was saying, like, okay, I think I get the point. It pretty much killed that whole mental fabrication. When we remember that this body is impermanent, things shift. For me to see that wanting, that I was wanting and desiring something that was inevitably going to turn into dust, completely reshaped my experience there. So remembering impermanence, remembering, as has been said, remembering that your house is on fire, body is going to fall away. When you look in the mirror, one of the first things you may notice is you're getting older. You know? It's like we're on this conveyor belt. You know? Where we know people well who have fallen off the conveyor belt. We're on our way. And these remembrances, and you may know, you know, the five remembrances, that can be a powerful way of just embracing the reality of impermanence. And if you'd like, you can close your eyes, and I'll just, these are translated from the Pali. I am subject to aging. I have not gone beyond aging. I am subject to illness. I have not gone beyond illness. I am subject to death. I have not gone beyond death. I will grow separate from all that is dear and appealing to me. I am the owner of my actions, heir to my actions, and related to my actions. Whatever I do, those I shall become. And if you like, you can deepen the breath. And you can open the eyes. When we remember that this body is inevitably going to fall away, it becomes an invitation to really investigate what is real, what is true. Where is awareness? Is awareness here? You know, is it in the enteric nervous system? If when the body falls away, where does awareness go? This is part of the mystery of opening to what it means to be fully and deeply embodied. Let's close our eyes again, and we'll close with a short reflection. Within the body you are wearing, now inside the bones and beating in the heart, lives the one you have been searching for so long. But you must stop running away and shake hands. The meeting does not happen without your presence, your participation. The same one waiting for you there is moving in the trees, glistening on the water, growing in the grasses, and lurking in the shadows you create. You have nowhere to go. The marriage happened long ago. And if you like, in these final minutes, you might open your awareness to sound. Just noting the vibrations of sound. This quality of present moment awareness, awake to the senses. Wanting nothing. And letting your attention flow with the sound of the bamboo flute. and with the space between the sounds. To take human form is rare. And to take human form, to contemplate and engage into the practices of liberation, is a blessing. These words from John O'Donohue. May your body be blessed. May you realize that your body is a faithful and beautiful friend of your soul. And may you be peaceful and joyful and recognize that your senses are sacred thresholds. May you realize that holiness is mindful gazing, feeling, hearing, and touching. May your senses gather you and bring you home. May your senses always enable you to celebrate the universe and the mystery and the possibilities in your presence here. May the eros of the earth bless you. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.